From KQED News, I'm Kat Snow. California environmentalists are pressing President Obama to protect thousands of square miles of federal lands from development by making them national monuments. These designations have been celebrated for preserving nature and criticized as an abuse of power. On this President's Day, let's get some insight on national monuments from a legal expert on public lands, UC Hastings law professor John Leshy. The professor spoke with KQED science editor Craig Miller.
I started by asking the most basic question. What's the difference between a national park and a national monument?
Very little difference. They're both primarily managed for protection of the natural resources and for recreation and for preservation for future generations. That's the basic thrust of them. The typical pattern, actually, if you look at the broad sweep of history, is that presidents protect these areas first by designating them as monuments under the president's authority. And then eventually Congress says, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's just make them a national park. Some areas are still monuments. You know, they haven't been converted to parks. They may never be. They're pretty much protected the same way.
The president has his authority to designate these things monuments under something called the Antiquities Act, which goes all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt.
Right. 1906.
The original intent of that, though, was, it seems, quite a bit narrower than it's often applied today.
Well, people argue about that. The impetus for the Antiquities Act, the reason Congress got interested in doing something like this, giving the president this authority, was because there was a lot of looting of archaeological sites in the Southwest. That was sort of the immediate trigger. Protecting places like Chaco Canyon and Canyon de Chelly and places like that. So Congress drafts the Antiquities Act. But important point, the Antiquities Act is not limited to protecting little postage stamp archaeological sites. It's worded actually quite broad. It says the president has the authority to protect objects of historic and scientific interest on federal lands. And so from the very beginning, the president's used this authority to protect some pretty large areas for some pretty broad sweeping values. Teddy Roosevelt, mostly Republican presidents for a long time, vigorously exercised this power. Democratic presidents did too. The Grand Canyon was first set aside. 800,000 acres was an object of historic and scientific interest protected under the act. That case went all the way to the United States Supreme Court as to whether it fit within the terms of the act. The Supreme Court unanimously said, well, of course it does.
The court has pretty much been supportive.
Never set aside a monument proclamation. Yeah. No subsequent president has ever undesignated an area. But the authority, remember, comes from Congress. I mean, the president's not doing this under some inherent power. The Antiquities Act was enacted by Congress. They handed the president this authority quite deliberately.
There's been a lot of burst of this kind of activity going on in California recently. We had almost 350,000 acres set aside in the San Gabriel Mountains very mm-hmm. recently, the old mm-hmm. Army base at Fort Ord.
Mm-hmm.
Another 350,000 acres proposed, stretching from Lake Berryessa mm-hmm. all the way up to Snow Mountain and the Mendocino National Forest. Almost 6,000 acres proposed along the Santa Cruz County coastline. These are big chunks of land.
Yes. Yep. Death Valley was set aside by President Hoover as a lame duck president. A couple of days before he left office, he created Death Valley National Monument. Congress was so happy eventually, you know, they grumble at the beginning, but they were so happy eventually it's now a national park. Almost always it happens with a lot of local support. Anyway, look at the San Gabriels. I mean, there's nobody down there who's really objecting to creating the San Gabriel National Monument. It's a big draw for people, basically.
But something that works as kind of a two-edged sword in all of this is the fact that, as I understand it, there is no set of standard rules about how the land can be used after such a designation. Each one of these is a custom build. So on the one hand, it's great that the law has that flexibility. But on the other hand, it also breeds suspicion sometimes among locals who say, well, wait a minute, does that mean I'm not going to be able to hunt, not going to be able to ride my ATVs? And this is going on right now just north of us.
Sure. And that's the normal process of any kind of conservation designation. Even when Congress designates national parks, you have these sort of negotiations about, well, is this trail going to stay open? Or the basic rule of thumb in the Antiquities Act is the purpose of doing it is to protect objects that you identify as having historic scientific interest, especially for future generations. So you write the proclamation to describe what those objects are, and then the protections sort of flow from that.
So why do you think that – why do you think we're having this burst of activity in California over the last couple of years? I mean, we mentioned several examples. Pieces have added to the California Coastal National Monument, too, which if you look at a map of that, it makes it look like the entire coast of California is a national monument, which is not the case, right?
Right, right.
You know, why is all this happening now?
Well, certainly a large part of it is the gridlock in Congress. A lot of these monuments that Obama has created or is looking at are places where there have been bills pending in Congress for, in cases, some cases, decades. And there are local people in many of these places saying, we're tired of waiting for Congress. Mr. President, you have the equivalent authority under the Antiquities Act to use it. Another reason is just presidents think about, naturally, their legacy. And many, many presidents, regardless of their partisan political, you know, values, say protecting land for future generations is a big legacy issue. To some extent, these lands protected are not – are they not locked up from all use? Often they become tourist magnets. They produce a lot of economic tourism-related benefits.
Well, that's the argument that's being advanced right now.
Yeah.
For
some and it's reason. It's true. I mean, it's absolutely true. I mean, there have been a bunch of studies about this that are pretty interesting. If you look at the West by county, the counties that have more protected land have a higher per capita income. And it has to do with a lot with tourism land values because of all the open spaces. What does it mean to live in the West? Living in the West means you can look around and see a lot of open space, and that is a tremendous economic value.
That's KQED's Craig Miller talking with UC Hastings Law Professor John Leshy. I'm Kat Snow, KQED News.
Support of KQED Science is provided by the Videz Family Foundation, Hope Lab, and the George G. and Jeanette A. Stewart Charitable Trust.